Hey guys, are you looking for a sports book that you can trust? Well, look no further than mybookie.ag, where you can get a 50% match on your initial deposit of up to $1,000 when you use promo code DFSArmy. As a bonus, when you use promo code DFSArmy, you also get a free month of DFSArmy VIP and DFSArmy Beat the Bookie membership. That's a $100 combined value. So we'll help you with your daily fantasy sports, and we'll help you with your handicapping free when you sign up for mybookie.ag using promo code DFSArmy.
In 2015, an elite DFS Army commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Welcome to Taco's Fast 40, coming at you from Atlanta Motor Speedway this week. It will be the debut of the new race package, so a lot of things to talk about in that regard. But first, I've got to tell you that at dfsarmy.com, you can check us out using the link in the description. If you sign up today with promo code TACO, you will get a lifetime 20% off and support the pod, and get access to the Research Station and Domination Station for everything racing, NASCAR, trucks, and Xfinity Series. We do them all, do projections for them all, and we'll have the Domination Station lineup optimizer available for all the sports, even with the craziness that's going to come tomorrow, Saturday, with the two races back-to-back. And of course, your subscription gets you access to all of our other sports premium content as well. Baseball's around the corner. Golf's getting into the good part of the season here soon with the Florida swing coming up. And basketball is back in full swing after the All-Star break. I'll include it in one package. It's really good value. You'll want to come check us out at dfsarmy.com and use promo code TACO on sign up for that lifetime 20% off. Okay, so Atlanta Motor Speedway. This is a track that we go to once a year. Most tracks we see at least twice on the cup circuit, at least. But here, we've historically only gone here once. It used to be raced later in the fall. Now it's, for the last few years, it's been raced very, very early in the schedule, right after the Daytona 500. And there are a few interesting things about this track. Before we get into all of the changes that we're going to see for this race. Now, this is the oldest asphalt surface in NASCAR. The last repave was back in 1997, so the surface is incredibly old, and that is going to come into play here big time. It means that the track kind of fallen apart. There's been a lot of rain, like a historic amount of rain in Atlanta over the last several months, really wearing down the track. It's got a nice big seam, a few seams that you'll see along the racetrack, and that's been a point of contention so far in the early practices, making sure you don't get your tires on those seams. You can possibly get loose going around there. Most people in the turns, at least, will either hug the line at the bottom or just stay in the middle lane right between the two seams there. And these turns are quite steep for a 1.5-mile track. Yes, this is a 1.5-mile intermediate oval, which of course means that we get to see the new race package that'll affect all races over a mile on the circuit. Of course, this is the long, you know, this is the most common type of NASCAR circuit. You've got several of other 1.5-mile tracks, and you know, this is where racing has been the most boring recently, mostly been dominated by a few drivers, and quite dominated, I must say, by the likes of Truex and Kyle Busch. And Kevin Harvick here, especially. The thing with this being an older track, again, with the surface wearing down, the grip is incredibly low, and tire fall off and rubber collecting on the track are going to be huge factors. People will run their fastest laps pretty shortly after getting new tires, and then their tires will erode in quality very, very quickly. You could see, you'll still see a lot of the fast laps go to the pole sitter. Just about an average amount compared to your other 1.5-mile tracks. You see about 35 of the 325 available fast laps go to the pole sitter on average. But usually it's whoever's out there leading a lot of laps. You know, this hasn't been too friendly to the pole sitter lately, especially over on FanDuel when it comes to a percentage of total fantasy points allotted to the pole sitter. You see about 8% on DraftKings and under 4% over there on FanDuel. It's one of the tracks where the pole sitter score the lowest. And I think a lot of that has to do with the dominators here not necessarily coming from the pole. We've had Harvick just move up a few spots and dominate that way. But you really just want to have the guy running out in front. This has been quite a lap turner. Historically, last year there was like a 150 lap run where it was just Kevin Harvick leading constantly, and we saw that the year before as well, and you might continue to see that. I don't know if it'll be Kevin Harvick exactly. We'll get into the troubles he's having with his car and the news there, but the new race package should change things quite a bit. We've seen the horsepower in the car drop significantly. Should be running about 20% slower in speeds. They recently did a test, and that's some of the only data we really have to work with this new package, that and last year's All-Star race, for what it's worth. And so far we're seeing the drivers are quite content with it. Honestly, I haven't heard too many gripes. And Kyle Larson was saying that they were still able to get pretty fast. They're trying to take some of the speed away from the cars to make these intermediate and bigger oval races less lap turners, and potentially bring in pack racing, which may be something that we see on some of these other 1.5-mile tracks and larger. But here at Atlanta, I think with the tendency for things to get single file, the quick fall off after the restarts, I think we'll still see a significant amount of follow the leader. This will probably be one of the tracks that's least affected by the new changes, but Atlanta historically has been the second fastest racetrack on average behind Charlotte Motor Speedway, which is also a 24-degree banked 1.5-mile quad oval. They're kind of similar, except for Charlotte, of course, has been repaved a whole decade later than Atlanta. So there's, this is the place where you're going to have the least amount of grip and the most tire wear of pretty much any track. There was a truck driver on the radio I heard earlier that said he would give the track a 0.5 out of 10 in the grip rating, to put it plainly. So whenever there's not a lot of grip on the track, we tend to see drivers take it a little more careful. You can be a little more loose with your car if you're pretty aggressive, but for the most part, you just want to get your car dialed in, especially with the new package. A lot of guys might play it a little safe or not really. There's just a lot of uncertainty going into this week, and this is pretty much a wait and see sort of thing. We're going to see how the racing actually goes with this package, and even after this week, as we go into the other the different kind of 1.5-mile tracks, the flatter ones, the slower ones. We'll have to see how those affect that. But, this is quite the big change. We haven't had a huge change like this. I know we've added more downforce and stuff recently in the last few years, but we haven't had a major change like this, probably since the last car generation change back in 2013. So we try to make sure our long-term stats go right back to the 2013 season. And not much farther, because that was a hugely significant change. You saw, crazy amounts of lap leaders going back to 2012, 2011 and so. And we're going to see more lap leaders and lap changes with this package. That's the main goal of this package here, with the tapered spacer added to the engine to reduce the horsepower from about like 750 down to about 500, 550. Horsepower, and it's going to, again, these drivers haven't really tried it yet, so we're going to have to see In practice, we did not see much pack racing. We didn't see pack racing in qualifying. But that is something that we are anticipating seeing a bit more of at some of these tracks. You know, in theory, driver skill and equipment differences should be nerfed a little bit, and the field should be closer bunched up. But again, we're gonna have to see how all of this goes. You know, Atlanta is quite the interesting track with how old it is and just the tendency of the race to go in the green flags. You know, last year there were pretty much no cautions at this race. It ranks fifth out of 23 tracks in both percentage of race raced under the green flag and percentage of the average percentage of laps finished. About 95% of scheduled laps are finished by these guys. So it's an incredibly, non-eventful race. Usually people don't crash out in large. It's not going to be anything like last week. You know, if last week was your first experience with NASCAR, you can pretty much throw it out the window. That was the last race of the old restrictor plate package. And with the new addition of the tapered spacer, they're actually going to do away with the restrictor plate from here on out, even at the Daytona and Talladega, the places that had restrictor plates before. That reduction in horsepower should be enough to where they don't need to run a restrictor plate, and we're going to have to see how that goes. You know, a lot of new things, a lot of new data to go through with this big change in the NASCAR circuit. And again, excited this year to be offering a lot more statistically. You know, with the new package setup, we've got a new statistical collection process going on. So we're recording every lap of each race and each practice session. And, you know, you can look at the laps from the first practice here. But the thing with practice this week is the first practice, it was quite obvious that all of the faster laps just came to people in qualifying trim. And that is going to be the case at most 1.5 mile tracks, pretty much always. The practices after qualifying are going to be the important ones. So I'm going to go through this field today and you know, go through the drivers and all that, but a lot of it's hanging on practice tomorrow. That's really going to be key. It's been helpful before in not just at 1.5 mile tracks, but at Atlanta. Practice times have been quite telling of results and ownership, definitely. We might want to look more to, you know, the guys with faster, like, average speeds, or, you know, guys that just had good lap times in general, instead of just guys that posted one hot lap. And being able to look at it lap by lap will definitely help with the analysis of practice. And, you know, if one guy posts one hot lap but doesn't do that great otherwise, or maybe, you know, a couple of people try drafting the entire time and other guys are just running it single file, you know, that could throw the numbers off completely. It happens a lot, and it might get people off of perfectly fine plays, and we're going to want to take advantage of that when that comes tomorrow. But for now, the practice times that we have are quite limited. Some guys barely got any laps out there, and of course, you know, we've got some guys who don't really know where they're at with their car right now, and, you know, some guys' speed might be misleading. I mean, the fastest on the board, Bowyer, Almirola, these guys were only out there in qualifying trim. They really wanted to just nail qualifying, and they did, starting first and third. And we're going to see if that holds up tomorrow in race trim, and we're also going to want to hear how these guys plan on attacking the race tomorrow, see if we can get any information about strategies and stuff like that. So before I dive into the player field here again, going to go over some historical numbers. Now, we're not going to take historical numbers into account like before, because things should be different. Things should change. But it's still good to just look at what the race has done in the past and kind of, you know, what's happened. So one of the main tools I like to point out are on the research station is the DraftKings and FanDuel historical scoring summary. And it's like the fourth and the fifth tab on the research station. And most important chart we have here is averages by starting position groups. You know, so you have all the different averages for fantasy points, average running position, average finish, average lead and fast laps, average driver rating, percentage of the time they come in the top six on DraftKings, the top five on FanDuel. Lots and lots of good stuff there. And most importantly, you can see what percentage of the time they hit different fantasy point marks. You can get a real sense of where value comes in the field. And we also have it broke down by season-long average driver rating, so you can see how the very good elite cars do compared to the weaker cars. And if you notice last week the guys starting 25th back to about 40th or so, they averaged about 35 fantasy points, is where the guys starting top 15 averaged under 15 fantasy points on DraftKings. As you can see, that's pretty much flipped entirely for Atlanta. And this is more normal. This is more of what a normal race looks like. Again, Daytona, if you're coming from last week being your first time playing NASCAR, it is completely different at a track like this. You're going to want to pick the guys from the front, especially the guys that can dominate and put up laps. There are or lead laps and fast laps, the dominator points. There are 325 laps in this race, 125 more than last week. And unlike last week, you can't get shuffled up or down like 15 to 20 spots in the span of a few laps. That does not happen here. Again, you see the same person leading for long stretches, and even with the changes, we'll probably still see a good amount of that. And you have different guys that are going to be doing better at the 1.5-mile tracks, and especially the guys in the back, they are going to get lapped. They are not going to have a chance to do what DiBenedetto did last week. Just no way. The guys that are leading the laps, guys that are getting the fast laps, are going to be the elite drivers. You see the guys coming in with a season average driver rating of 110 or more since 2013, we've had seven of them. They've averaged 70 lead laps and 41 fast laps. The guys averaging 100 to 110 driver rating for the season. They average 42 lead laps and 20 fast laps. There have been 14 of them. Then the guys 90 to 100 season long average driver rating. You're kind of elite, but not quite super elite. You know, your Almirola's, Boyer's, you know, Hamlin's, guys like that. They average 17 lead laps and 15 fast laps, and then if you get lower than that, they don't average any more than 4 or 5 lead or fast laps. You're not going to get the dominator points from them. And they finish way farther back down the pack, too. So it is not a good race for your middling teams, especially your guys in the very back. If you look at the starting positions and how they score, positions 1 through 5 score incredibly. You get a little bit more guaranteed upside from the guys starting 6th through 15th back in there. Guys starting 6th through 10th, 73% of the time, they hit 30 fantasy points compared to only 57% of the time from the guys starting in the top 5. But if you look at the amount of times they hit 40 or 50 or 60 fantasy points, as you go farther up in the upside, the advantage skews way more towards the guys starting top 5. And those are going to be your dominators. If you look back at, historically, the top DraftKings scorers here, you had Jimmy Johnson in 2015 put up 135 DraftKings points just by starting pretty much in last place there, winning the race, and leading 92 laps. That'll do it on DraftKings for sure. And the two biggest scores on both DraftKings and FanDuel came in the last 2 years with Kevin Harvick. And last year, he started in third, won, led 181 laps with 78 fast laps. And that got him 132 on DraftKings and 93 on FanDuel. Pretty much a must play. If you didn't play him, you really didn't cash. That's how it goes with the Dominator here. And at most 1.5-mile tracks. And then 2017, he did kind of the same thing. Started from the pole and won, led 292 or he didn't win, he finished ninth, sorry. His average position was first, though. That's how much of the race he led. He pretty much led the entire race until the end when Keselowski snuck in for the victory. But he led 292 laps with 59 fast laps for 129 DraftKings points and 94 FanDuel points. Again, must plays on both sides. You see in the top scores, they're pretty much all from either the top five or guys like Kyle Busch, Jimmy Johnson, Matt Kenseth, and Martin Truex Jr., who started 35th or worse, basically guys that started in the back and finished top five. If you go year by year on DraftKings here, just look at 2018. The optimal lineup on DraftKings was Harvick, of course, who dominated. and Juan. Truex, who started 35th and finished 5th. It makes sense there. He was not in the optimal on FanDuel, however. Quite interesting there, but Truex was not in the optimal on FanDuel, despite starting 35th and finishing 5th, to give you a hint of how FanDuel works over there. We'll go over FanDuel in a second here, but you know the rest of the lineup, you can't really fit this lineup. These were the top six highest scores were after Truex is Keselowski, who started 5th and finished 2nd, Hamlin, who started 12th and finished 4th, and Kurt Busch, who started 7th, finished 8th, but had 52 lead laps in there. And then Clint Bowyer, who started 9th and finished 3rd. So you basically want to slam in all the top 5 guys you can. And really the value down low in salary would have came from guys like David Ragan starting 29th and finishing 23rd, or Byron starting 23rd and finishing 18th. But really all the fantasy points are pretty much saved for the guys leading tons of laps and stuff like that. You can look at 2017 should be the same sort of story with Harvick leading all those laps. You saw Casey Kane come from 29th and finish 4th. Obviously, he was in the optimal even on FanDuel. And other than that, it was all guys in the top 15 that finished up there in the top 5. That was the optimal in 2017. It was just the top 5. And then Harvick, who dominated most of the race, but ended up finishing at 9th. Again, it wouldn't really be the optimal. It wouldn't fit overall, but those are the top highest scoring guys, and it's pretty much the same on FanDuel. Now, if you go to FanDuel, the FanDuel historical summaries, you'll notice that pretty much everyone's guaranteed at least 10 points, if not 20. The guys starting 30th or worse, they're not guaranteed to get to 20 or 30 fantasy points, but if you look at any other starting position, you know, first through 30th pretty much have over a 97% chance of hitting 30 fantasy points over there on FanDuel, and you'll just see the differences between guys are very, very minute in scoring. It's pretty much all about finishing position over there. Lead laps over fast laps, obviously, since fast laps don't count for anything on FanDuel, but again, those usually kind of go to the same sort of people there. But if you're starting in the top 5, 25% of the time, you'll finish is one of the highest scoring on FanDuel, 22% of the time if you're starting 6th through 10th. And then 16th through 20th, actually, 17% of the time they're finishing in the top spots on FanDuel there. No other 5-position slot has better than an 8% chance of hitting on there. But yeah, with FanDuel, it's just it's more telling if you go by the season average driver rating. If you have a 100 or a 90 or better a season average driver rating, you have over a 40% chance of being one of the top scorers, as where, you know, 80 to 90 on the season, 11% chance. 70 to 80, you have a 5% chance. After that, you have no chance. It's real, you know, that it's a lot more linear when you look at it by just season average driver rating. So on FanDuel, you really want to focus on the guys who have a good recent 1.5 mile stats. You know, usually these stats carry on a lot more than, you know, other stats. If you just look at overall, like, average finish and stuff, it includes, like, plate races and short tracks, and they have, like, nothing to do with these 1.5 mile tracks. They're the most common type of track, and we get about 12 races on them a year. So you get a lot of sample to look at. And I like to look at for recent, just the last 2 years, how they've done on 1.5 mile tracks. And it's quite obvious who's good and who isn't good at these. And you can also look at their longer term stats as well. Just keep in mind what team these guys are on. That is something I did add to the research station this week. I added which team they're affiliated with, and I used a color scheme just kind of by random, but the color scheme will also show you affiliations. So the higher priced drivers, you can see what team they're on now pretty easily. Like, a good example here is, you know, Logano and Keselowski and Ryan Blaney. You can see not only do they drive Fords, but they have Penske, and the Penske color is yellow. If you go down to Paul Menard, down $6,000, you know he's not on a stronger team like Penske, but it's the same color as Penske, yellow, because he's on Wood Brothers Racing, which has a technical alliance with Penske. So if they have a technical alliance, they're going to stay the same color as their main team. Of course, the main teams to know are Penske, the Fords, Stuart Haas Racing, also Fords, Kevin Harvick, Clint Boyer, Almirola, and Daniel Suarez. I mean, you know, you've got the Hendricks, who are just a blue in color there. And you can see down JTG Racing. They're also the same blue because they're a technical alliance with Hendrick this year. So just know that those guys aren't going to have the same car as their more expensive brethren. And you'll want to know that. You'll get to know the teams and stuff as we go on throughout the year. And races like last week, you know, Team Alliance, we can see. We've seen team stacks, especially with like Stuart Haas Racing last year, come into play. So it's good to know. I have quick access to who's on what team and who's allianced with who. If they don't have a color down at the bottom of the field, it means they're just a complete scrub. You know, there are some scrubs I have. I like the Front Row Racing guys, Reagan McDowell and Tift. They're not the greatest cars, obviously, but you know, they aren't absolutely horrible like the guys from Premium or Go Fast, Starcom, your Castles, Chastains, McLeods of the world. Well, I don't know, Chastain could end up being decent, we'll see, but he still is yet to graduate here for me in his car. But yeah, just something nice to add to the research station. Also the top three odds to go with the odds to win as well. It's a nice little addition. And then I've kind of just reworked the practices for right now, just so you can see not only the fast laps and how far off the pace people were from fast lap, but also the average speed as well. You can see which guys had the fastest how guys were ranked based on average speed and how far they were off from the pace on that. And that's, of course, going to come way more in handy tomorrow. Of course, yesterday was really thrown off by the mix of qualifying trim and race trim, but we'll deal with that throughout the season. It's also going to be something that you'll have to get used to. So let's go through the field here real quick. The most interesting guy, you can go by DraftKings pricing here. The most interesting guy, of course, is priced up high. Should be priced up higher, honestly, with how he has destroyed this track over the years. But it's Kevin Harvick at 12,200. He has a power steering issue. It held him to only two practice laps, and they were quite slow, you know. Not the greatest of weeks for him so far. Might end up having to go to a backup car. We're going to have to really wait until tomorrow to see what to make of him, because he is very, very, very important here. He averages 151 lead laps and 56 fast laps, and on multiple occasions, especially over the last 2 years, he has been mandatory to have in your lineups. You know, always finishing top 10 here, and you know, 120 driver rating, 126 driver rating actually, at 1.5 mile tracks, better than Truex Jr. and significantly better than anyone else in the field. These 1.5 mile tracks, he absolutely dominated them last week. Last year. He just absolutely crushed the 1.5 miles. He had several races where he led everything, averaged 83 lead laps on average. I mean, clearly the class of the field at 1.5 mile tracks over Truex. It's him and Truex. And then there's a gap between Truex and Kyle Busch. And then there's quite a gap between him, Kyle Busch, and the other Kyle Larson. And, you know, a big gap on the rest of the field as far as the 1.5 mile guys go. They have really, really dominated. You know, it's not, you know, last week Penske was the favorite, were the favorites at Daytona, but they definitely take a step back here. The Stuart Haas Racing Fords and, of course, the JGR Toyotas really, really do work here at the 1.5 mile tracks. And, you know, with Harvick, he's going to be a huge factor, but he's got some real power steering issues with his car, and that's going to throw a wrench into everything. You know, he's going to be the super chalk if that's cleared up, starting 18th at a place he's dominated at historically without fail. It's just that, you know, I was listening to Jamie McMurray on Race Hub, and he said that his team had ran into a very similar problem a couple of years ago, and ultimately they were never able to figure out what it was with this car. So, you know, with the Harvick, it's all wait and see. If he ends up being perfectly fine in practice tomorrow, you should probably smash him and hope people maybe get concerned or something, but just know he's going to be the chalk starting at 18. But if his troubles continue, then that's a pretty nice fade to make there. You know, power steering really isn't something to mess with. in NASCAR, especially when it's, you know, the beginning of a new package and there's so much uncertainty and stuff. So gonna have to wait and see with Harvick. You know, if, you know, pretty much like I had said, if things are fine, he is the best play you can possibly make. And if things aren't, then you're gonna have to avoid him and hope a lot of the field is not paying attention and takes him anyway, which I really think they'll do, especially this early in the season. Next up, you've got both your Penske guys. The pricing on them is going to be a little high, with them having just some really good finishes overall at this track over the last few years. Keselowski winning a couple years ago and coming runner-up last year, but not really with domination. You know, Logano has dominated this race before, but and he averages 27 lead laps, 24 fast laps at Atlanta. Keselowski, despite winning, only averages 15 lead laps, 21 fast laps here at Atlanta. But they do rank second and third in driver rating in Atlanta. Of course, you get a lot of that just from happening to dominate and win and all that. But they've been able to keep their car together for the most part. Keselowski's had a couple of problems here back in 2014, 2013, had some crashes. But other than that, they pretty much finished top 10 and are about as safe as they come. Logano's favorite over Keselowski right now in the books. He's about an 8-1 with Keselowski 10-1. It's a little bit interesting to see there with Keselowski's recent results being a little better than Logano's here, which just over the last few years. A lot of it just has to do with Logano, you know, being the defending champion and all that. But really, last playoffs, Keselowski was killing it, not just Logano. He was the one winning races and that, so I consider them to be pretty similar. Honestly, Logano's a little faster in practice, took twice as many laps, but again, tomorrow's we're going to have to see with all of that. Now, Logano starts 27th, so he is a huge play on DraftKings. He couldn't really get his car going right for he wanted to do a redo on his practice lap, or qualification lap, but he was ultimately never able to. He just kind of messed up there. Nothing really wrong with the car. And Keselowski, starting 19th, also missed the second or the third round of qualifying there. So, you know, both of them really, really solid place differential plays. Logano at 11-7. I mean, you have to really pay for that price differential. 11-1 for Brad Keselowski is a little more appealing. Probably holds a little bit more value. I mean, they're both going to get pretty similar results. Of course, Logano gets the better starting position, and historically is a little tiny bit better at finishing laps and stuff. Had a really solid season last year with only one DNF and 24 1.5 mile races. That's over the last 2 years, but Keselowski only has three DNFs in that span. They're pretty darn similar. You know, Keselowski actually has a better has slightly better stats at 1.5 mile tracks, especially when it comes to collecting fast laps. That's something that Logano is not quite as good at as Keselowski. So they're both solid plays. You can, you know, you'd probably have to pick one of them for cash. I don't think you can go with both of them because you'll want to get other expensive place differential plays like Elliott and Blaney, who cost quite a bit. You're gonna have to make some choices there. Logano probably the safest one for cash, especially with his acumen to just finish laps. You know, he finished within two laps of the lead in 96% of races last year and finished on the lead lap in 79% of races and finished 99% of his scheduled laps as well. I like both the Penske guys. Of course, I like Blaney more because he's just cheaper and he starts right there next to Logano. He's gonna pull in a little more ownership. Logano and Keselowski, you gotta pay for him. Really gotta pay up for him. Over on FanDuel, you know, they're not quite as expensive. They have Harvick is 14K, Kyle Busch is 13.5, and then Logano and Keselowski right there about 13K even. You know, place differential doesn't matter nearly as much over there still. You're kind of just playing them for having a good finishing spot. So they're not nearly as freebies of plays as they are on DraftKings. They're really, really solid DraftKings plays if you can afford them. And if Kevin Harvick is out of it, I mean, that's an obvious just, you know, easy pivot over to Logano or Keselowski, save a little bit, but you know, if Harvick is in play, it's going to be a lot harder to afford those guys. Next, you got Kyle Busch at $10,500. Again, more expensive over there on FanDuel at $13,500. He starts in sixth, and He's another one of those guys that really dominates the 1.5-mile tracks, averages 50 lead laps and 33 fast laps at these. And it's not really been at Atlanta. He hasn't done a ton, averages just 9 lead and 10 fast laps at Atlanta since 2013. He missed the 2015 version of this race, of course, when he hurt himself and had to have I think it was Eric Jones and Ty Dillon replace him in his car there for a little bit. But usually Kyle Busch, you know, he's more of a great play at short tracks, but he's still very good at 1.5-mile tracks and can definitely be a guy that leads, you know, 200 laps. That is absolutely something Kyle Busch can do. He won here back in 2013, third in 2016. So he can definitely bang. He's actually the Vegas favorite right now at 5-1. Over Kevin Harvick, and I'm sure that will only get better for him as, you know, news of Harvick's car struggles continue. So Kyle Busch starting sixth has real dominator potential. You know, a lot of the guys starting up front, like Almirola, Stenhouse, Bowyer, they really don't have a history of leading large segments of 1.5-mile tracks. You know, Almirola's on the pole, and he averages all of 4 lead laps at 1.5-mile track. So the domination spot is going to be up for grabs for anyone who wants it. And, you know, Kyle Busch has to be one of the main considerations there for a dominator. Right underneath him, you have Denny Hamlin at $10,000. He starts fourth. Not the greatest track for him, but he has crashed in 3 of his last six attempts here. When he hasn't crashed, he's finished 3rd, 16th, and 4th. Has dominated before. Let's find out here real quick. Go by Denny Hamlin. That's the greatest part of the... Just, you can go in the historical performances tab and just filter by a certain name. You can see how they've done on each of these... each of these races, and he's actually led in 3 of his last 6 races. In 2018, last year, he led 26 laps, had 10 fast laps. In 2015, he led 14 laps, and in 2014, he led 37 laps, and had at least 7 fast laps in every race, and over 10 fast laps in 4 of his 6 races. Again, even in the races where he completed, you know, he wrecked out about halfway through in 2017, you know, he still had the 7 fast laps and stuff. So he was in a Joe Gibbs Toyota, pretty much similar equipment to Kyle Busch, starting up a little higher. He does have a chance to dominate and lead. It's not something he's done here or at 1.5-mile tracks all that often, averaging about 17 lead laps, but he can definitely do it. It is not outside of his realm of capabilities, so he's going to be someone you'll want just some exposure of, just in case he does lead a lot. Maybe a little bit of a better play on FanDuel with the starting position. But just something you want exposure to. He's not really that much of a favorite. You know, he's 13-1 compared to, like, Keselowski's 10-1, Logano's 8-1, Harvick's 6-1, Busch's 5-1. Chase and Truex and Larson are there, like, 8-1. So Hamlin really is expected to kind of fall back a little bit here and not win. But, I mean, he won last week. Doesn't have much to do with this week, but still, he can win pretty much at any time. You know, last year was a rarity for him, with him not getting a win. He usually wins about once or twice a year, and it doesn't really matter the track type too much. He can win kind of wherever. And, he even has a 1.5-mile win from 2 years ago. So it's definitely something he can do. Just someone you'll want to have a little bit of exposure to, a little bit more on FanDuel. Chase Elliott, this is his hometown track. His dad has the all-time NASCAR speed record here. Definitely won't be coming anywhere near the speed record now with the tapered spacer and all that. But he's finished top 10 in all 3 of his races here at Atlanta. Not really leading laps. He's never led a lap, but he averages 13 fast laps, which is quite nice. And him starting 22nd, that is also quite nice. He's $9,700. Not quite nice, because that is way more expensive than Elliott usually is. Will still get a lot of love. They know he's the hometown folk. And he just gets a lot of over-ownership in general because he's Chase Elliott. Ever since Dale Jr. left NASCAR, he's been NASCAR's most famous driver, most popular driver for sure. always gets voted into the All-Star race. So Chase Elliott, just like his dad, you know, revered by the fans. And this is his hometown track, place where his dad has won at before and did really well at. And he just hopes to continue that legacy on. And starting 22nd, really outside of the price, just a really safe play. And he's done better at 1.5 mile tracks than other types of tracks. Even though we haven't seen the domination really come from him, he always puts his nose up there, usually towards the end of a race. So even on FanDuel, a good target over there for a little bit cheaper. And on DraftKings, you know, just great with the place differential. It's just the price that's a little bit of a concern for him and the popularity. So go down to Martin Truex Jr., starting 9th. Starts his year on the Joe Gibbs Racing Toyota crew, which he was pretty much a part of with Furniture Row Racing. Has taken over Suarez's car there, but he's bringing over his whole team from Furniture Row Racing, pretty much, Cole Pern and all that, so it's not really a downgrade by any means. He's the third favorite on the board, just barely over guys like Chase Elliott and Joey Logano. Now, mind you, Chase Elliott's odds to win, a little of that has to be bumped up. Sort of like how Tiger Woods' odds are always bumped up a little bit just because people love to bet Elliott, especially at his hometown track. So keep that in mind. He's probably really like a 10-1. But Truex is an 8-1. I would only expect that to go down, really. I mean, it's a 1.5-mile track. Harvick had a 126 average driver rating at 1.5-mile tracks recently. Truex is right there at 124. And there's the jump off to Larson at 112. And then no one's over 110 besides them, so... Truex is right there in Harvick, averages 74 lead laps, 43 fast laps at 1.5-mile tracks. And, yeah, not much more can be said. You know, the only concern is the switchover in equipment, which it really isn't that much. Over the last 2 years, he has 8 wins at 1.5-mile tracks to Harvick's 5. No one else has more than 3, that being Kyle Busch and Brad Keselowski. Other than those guys, nobody has more than 1 win at 1.5-mile track. So this is definitely his best track type by far. Starting 9th even gives him a little bit of room to go up. He's finished better than 9th in 5 of his last 6 races here. Outside of the one race that he ran into a little trouble at. And in his 1.5-mile races since 2013, he has raced 71 times with only 1 DNF. That comes in at under a 2% DNF percentage rate. Just races super clean at these 1.5-mile tracks. And he usually avoids crashes by being either in the very front or in the front three, pretty much. That's where he spends all his time, like in the top five, really in the top three, these 1.5-mile tracks. And it's without fail. Truex just, even if he doesn't look great coming in with practice speeds and all that, he just always does really well at 1.5-mile tracks. So he's going to be a main target. Cash GPP, $9,500. Honestly, that's a discount for him. We're used to seeing him in the five digits, especially at a 1.5-mile track. So Truex, one of the stronger plays of the week. Kyle Larson, $9,300, starting 7th. A little bit high for him, but he's shown chops at 1.5-mile tracks, just not here. He has not really led laps here or anything. Doesn't even get fast laps, averages 4 fast laps. So this isn't the best 1.5-mile track for him. He does a lot better at like Homestead, where you ride around the outside a lot. Here, the outside groove is definitely not for you. It's very dangerous out there. So, you know, you're going to want to, you know, I think you'll want to focus more on like your Truex's, Kyle Busch's, and Kevin Harvick's, honestly, unless Harvick's all messed up. Larson has a good stats here, but I think it's his 1.5-mile stats are just the little tiniest bit skewed by the fact that he always just crushes things like Homestead. And I think there are tracks like, I want to say Kansas or something. Other ones he's a little bit better at, but, you know, he's definitely capable of it. Runner-up here in 2017. Really top 10 whenever he doesn't get into trouble. So, again, you'll want to splash a little bit of ownership his way, sort of like Hamlin. Probably a little better of a play than Hamlin. Definitely, but still not someone you want to be too crazy about. But if you think his ownership might dip down with, you know, people seeing his price being so low last week and him going, oh, why has this price jumped up so much? You know, maybe that might keep his ownership a little bit low. If that's the case, then I would play him. Not the worst play on FanDuel either, although he has a little bit of a knack for getting into trouble. But yeah, Kyle Larson, just an okay play for me. Still not entirely sure what Chip Ganassi Racing's doing for the season and with him and Kurt Busch, but this will definitely be a nice litmus test for them. Clint Bowyer, and he had the fastest car today, both in practice and in the qualifying rounds up until the last round. He ended up third. He'll be starting third right behind his teammate, Almirola. It's kind of easy to see Almirola leading the first chunk of this race over Bowyer, but we've seen weirder things. But with Bowyer being right behind Almirola and the Stewart Haas Racing Fords outside of Harvick showing lots and lots of speed, it really does seem like stage one, Almirola is going to lead a good chunk with Bowyer just chilling behind him, not pushing the issue. But his car is really fast, and we'll have to see if that holds up through practice tomorrow. And, you know, 1.5-mile tracks, even, you know, and with his last racing team, it's obvious why he didn't dominate here, but even with Stewart Haas Racing equipment over the last couple of years, he only averages one lead lap, so even with a lightning-fast car, it's going to be, you know, he doesn't have the precedent, at least, of leading laps, but he didn't have a precedent of leading laps at Daytona either, and he dominated the entire duel there for what that's worth, so it's hard to go against a Stewart Haas Racing Ford here. It's just starting third. He seems like a FanDuel-only sort of play to me. I don't even see how he dominates if Almirola is going to be right there. It's not like he's going to push the issue too much, especially them starting in the second row and being right behind Almirola there. So that's just how I feel about Bowyer. He could prove me wrong easily. Ryan Blaney starting back in 26th. I already said I like this guy. I'm really bullish on him just for the season. I expect him to jump right up there with the likes of Keselowski and Logano and start getting priced like those guys as he really comes into form. Hasn't finished better than 12th here, and the 1.5-mile tracks that he has blown up on previously has mostly been like Texas. Not really been the tracks like this or Charlotte with, you know, the more considerable 24-degree banking and all that, but it's just the place differential here. Really easy place differential for him to make up, and his first season, really his first 2 years or so, he's kind of iffy with crashes and stuff, but last year he finished 98% of his laps. 80% of the time he's finishing at least within two laps of first place, so that's not too bad to see, at least the 1.5-mile tracks there, and this is definitely his best track type, even if his success hasn't come at this track necessarily. You know, he only has a 73 average driver rating at Atlanta, but it's a 94 overall at 1.5-mile tracks, so really just a nice play with the place differential, $8,900. It's just going to be a core play, and he might have some dominator upside, but I'm not going to say that about him until he really proves himself more. And like most people, have to see with practice tomorrow. Now you've got your pole sitter, Almirola, $8,700. Over there on FanDuel, he's 10K even, which it's more than on DraftKings, but still a pretty fair price for him because Almirola does way better in fantasy scoring on FanDuel than in DraftKings, just kind of by default. And starting on the pole, you'll want to get exposure on both sides, but especially over there on FanDuel. Because even if he goes back a few spots, he'll still do all right, especially if he gets, you know, some lead laps to work with, if he leads a good chunk of the first stage. And on DraftKings, if you're playing him, you're really just hoping he leads all of the first stage or something and gets all the fast laps that go with that. That's how he makes value there. If he doesn't, if he's passed by someone like Kyle Busch, like right away after like 15 laps or so, he is going to sink your lineups. He's not going to really fight back and take over, you know, for you. This 1.5-mile tracks are not his best track types. You want them at different tracks, like shorter tracks and plate races especially and stuff like that. But still, you know, Almirola, another guy I'm just bullish on, had a much better season last year with the Stewart Haas Racing equipment. It's only going to get better. But again, we'll have to wait and see with Almirola. Unless you're on FanDuel this week, then I guess you can play him all you want. But I'd very much limit him on DraftKings to just being sort of a splash, just hoping that he leads a million laps just with him starting on the pole. Now, Kurt Busch starting in 8th, one of the newer members of Chip Ganassi Racing in Jamie McMurray's number one Chevy that he raced last year. He loves to finish top 10. Here is a really, really good history of doing all right at Atlanta. This is one of his better tracks, honestly. Again, we're not too sure about the equipment, but he's fourth. He put up the fourth fastest lap and had the fifth fastest average speed in that first practice. We'll see if that holds, but he's impressed so far in his new Chevy. This is a guy that's been driving a Ford for a while, and sometimes we see some growing pains with guys that switch over makes. We saw it with Stuart Haas when they first went to Ford, but they got over that pretty quickly. So Kurt, honestly, he's not that far removed from driving a Chevy. Now they kind of put two and two together there. They were just racing them at Stuart Haas, and of course he's been racing lots of different cars in his career. He's one of the most veteran-y vets out there, older than the likes of Jimmy Johnson, probably in one of his last seasons here. But starting eighth, kind of the same play it was all last year, just starting a little too high to be worth anything great. You would look to him on FanDuel, where he's only $9,600. Not a bad price over there. I would definitely play him on FanDuel over DraftKings. He did lead a decent portion of this race last year, so that's nice to keep in mind. I just wish he had the same Stuart Haas racing speed going for him. Jimmy Johnson is starting back in 11th, which isn't that great for him. Probably will end up finishing right there, going backwards a little bit. He won here in both 2015 and 2016. Last 2 years, it's been a lot rougher for him. But yeah, this is one of his better tracks. And, his stats have been significantly worse than long-term. He used to be one of the elite in racing, and the last 2 years have been incredibly rough for him. Didn't make the playoffs last year or win a race, let alone lead a lap until, some garbage laps late in the season. It's really hard to take Jimmy starting 11th on either site. Eric Jones starting 15th. $8,100, that is a very good price on DraftKings for a JGR Toyota. Really excited to see him start kind of back, but not too far back to where he'll be popular. Jones always kind of finds a little bit of popularity, though. People really just tend to flock to him. And he did really well in Daytona last week. Might get him a little bit of love. He just managed to survive and be in the optimal and just end up being an all right play. He does crash more than your average driver, but here's not too much of an issue at a safer track, and he's at least finished better than he started here in each of his races, and kind of got better at the 1.5-mile tracks as last year went on, but still is just okay at them. Doesn't have dominator upside, really. Averages 3 lead laps and 8 fast laps at 1.5-mile tracks. I don't really know what to make of him too much here. Just kind of a cheaper price for him. If you have just enough money to pick between like Kurt Busch or Jimmy Johnson or even like Almirola and Eric Jones, I'd still go Jones over all these guys. He's just in an area with salary where the plays underneath him and above him are all pretty crappy. So you're going to find yourself using more Jones than usual, and you should feel relatively safe going with Jones over the alternatives at least. So going to the next few plays, again, some fades here. Daniel Suarez starting in fifth. This will be a third car in a stack of Stuart Haas Racing Fords, probably taking that inside line for Sunday's race. So you could see them even going 1, 2, 3. Suarez hasn't had much success here, or really at the 1.5-mile tracks with Joe Gibbs Racing. Of course, he gets a change of scenery with Stuart Haas, but it's pretty similar equipment, especially for the 1.5s. You could say that Stuart Haas was even better than JGR last year. Really, a lot of JGR's success in 1.5-mile tracks came from, Truex by proxy, but also mostly by Kyle Busch, especially all the lead laps and stuff. But Suarez, he has never led at a 1.5-mile track. Starting fifth, he might have a chance to, but I don't really see it, especially with his teammates above him. Kind of a real fade for me. Over on FanDuel, maybe his price might be decent. $6,800. Yeah, that's a play you can definitely make on FanDuel, so I'll call him FanDuel only. Probably the most FanDuel only of any play besides Stenhouse here. Austin Dillon, starting 10th. I know he has a tendency to just sneak into the top 10 in races. It's kind of always his MO, but he would need to do that in order to put up any sort of value here. Another pretty solid fade. He was third in practice, but I doubt that holds up. Yeah, just not huge on him, especially at the 1.5 mile tracks where his driver rating is about a 70 or so, and you know it's been really rough to guys with that 70 driver rating at this track. Just not a place where you'd pick him, especially starting in the top 10. Matt DiBenedetto, another fade. This is just the upper 7K, lower 8K range is just a whole range of fades, making Erik Jones really look like a better play than he is, but it's just all the plays around him are so bad. DiBenedetto starts 20th. He was amazing last week, leading tons of laps at the Daytona 500, but that's Daytona. It's very different. A very different story than we'll see here. He has no chance of doing that here whatsoever, and he's going to go backwards almost for sure. He's in a new car, Casey Kane's Levi Family Racing 95 from last year. They have an alliance with JGR now, but it's not like he's going to be getting a JGR Toyota by any means. He's yet to finish better than 28th here. Of course, that was in much worse equipment, but still 500 to 1 the books right now. Even Vegas isn't really picking up on this guy's chances. Just a really bad play starting in 20th, in my opinion. We'll see if he proves me wrong. Another just awful play, at least for DraftKings. At $7,500, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. starting on the outside pole. No thank you there. Always qualifies really high here and then goes backwards. He does that repeatedly. And just going to see that again here. I don't think he stands a chance against the Stuart Haas Fords. So just not a very good play. Maybe play him over there on FanDuel with a price of $7,600. But even then, not too bullish on, you know, him being a guy that you would like to play either site, really. Just a real fade. I really don't see him stealing the lead. But I do think he'll be better this season than seasons past. Just not here. This isn't where I'm going to go him. I'm going to stick with the elites here. And then you've got a pocket of pretty decent plays just in the teens. Not the highest upside plays here, but you're going to want to get some of them, you know. This isn't a place where the very back has given up or has posted fantasy points at any real numbers. You know, the guys in the teens still have a chance of just outperforming them by finishing better than them and even moving up a few spots themselves. So you've got Alex Bowman and William Byron. We'll probably talk about them as a whole here. They're starting 16th and 17th, both Hendrick Chevys. Both on the pole last week at Daytona, but this is a completely different story. Bowman is probably he probably has a higher upside here, even though Byron has a better finish than Bowman ever has with his 18th year last year. Byron really struggled at 1.5 mile tracks, though, with an average driver rating of 64, and that's even with his 5 DNFs in his 12 races taken out. Just not a very solid 1.5 mile track racer. You really see him do better at other types of tracks, but starting 17th, that's fair enough. Still better to go Bowman starting 16th. He's at least shown some acumen. You know, his longer term stats are skewed with him being on much worse race teams in years past, but yeah, both of these plays are just mediocre to okay, but they're a lot better than the alternatives that we've seen up in the higher 7K range. You've got Paul Menard starting 14th at $7,000. That's an all right play, but he's starting a little high. Pretty similar to stuff that we saw from him last year. He's not one to lead laps, though. Just doesn't have that upside, even with the Penske Alliance here. Just he's looking to either finish where he starts or even go back a tiny amount. Just not the best track type for him. And then you've got Ryan Newman starting 13th. And he has shown ability to finish in the top 10 here in years past. He's in a new ride, taking over Trevor Bayne's number 6 Ford that we saw Bayne and Kenseth share last year for Roush. Now this is, you know, it's not really too much of a step up or down from RCR, or Richard Childress Racing, that he was in last year. They're pretty similar. It's just Roush tends to do better at different tracks than RCR does. But it's pretty similar. You know, you can kind of expect the Ryan Newman from last year for the most part. He just might do a little bit better at things like plate races, and I don't know, maybe he'll have some success at places that Stenhouse and Bain have had success at in the past. But he's bringing over a lot of his own guys. Starting 13th, probably the worst of this little pocket of plays to play, in my opinion, even though he's 6,900, which is really cheap for him. Daniel Hemric starting at 28th. Still not entirely sure what to make of him. He's the newest RCR driver in their new number 8 car. The place differential upside is a little obvious here, but he's also 500 to 1 in the books. Or no, he's 275 to 1 in the books here, so not quite getting the love that his teammate Austin Dillon at 80 to 1 is getting. Still very unsure about him. You know, last week isn't going to really tell you much about him, so let's see how he does in practices and stuff. Just mediocre looking so far, but starting 28th, that will give you some upside to move up for sure. He's probably still going to have trouble staying on the lead lap. I think he's definitely a guy that gets lapped, and that's the concern about the guy starting in the low 20s and the 30s. They have more upside than the guys starting in the teens, sure, but these guys, Menard, Newman, Byron, Bowman, they're not going to get lapped, or they might get lapped towards the end of the race and be like one lap down, as we're guys like Hemric, guys like Bubba Wallace, and guys I'll talk about here, they're probably going to get lapped. Might get lapped a few times, and that might really limit their upside. So Daniel Hemric starting 28th, also Bubba Wallace here starting 29th. I like him a little bit better than Hemric even, but he's also going to be a little bit higher owned, I would imagine. These two, they have the great upside. There just aren't really crashes to move them up spots like that. And again, getting lapped is going to be a real issue for these guys. So I'm going to play them, especially with the change in package. It really should help guys like this, but I'm still not that optimistic. Guys starting, you know, that far back historically, they have not scored well. Much at all, but they have at least the guys starting 26th through 30th average 27 fantasy points to the guys starting 31st to 35th average 17. So I guess that's kind of reason enough to play them a little bit. Really, guys starting from 11th through 30th all average around the same fantasy points, with just a slight edge going up as you get further up. But Hemric, he at least has a little bit of upside to work with, you know, same as Wallace, really. Wallace has a little bit more experience, or probably a little bit better of a car with his Richard Petty 43. I think he crashed here last year, finished 32nd, or just had a really bad race, honestly. He really does seem to be better at certain track types as well. 1.5-mile tracks were not his wheelhouse last year, so there's kind of a reason he's starting back here. I think people might be tricked into overplaying these guys like Hemric and Wallace back here, so that's why I kind of have a little bit of pause, but we're still going to have to see with these guys. Priest really impressed last week. It wasn't really his debut, but it was his debut as a rookie at Daytona, and he just barely, narrowly avoided two wrecks to really give himself an amazing finish. I kind of like him as a fade because of it. He's going to be really high up there in like fantasy points per game, and you know, they'll see the great finish from last week, but this is a big ol' kind of fade for me, starting 25th in AJ Allmendinger's JTG Doherty Racing car from last year. Teammate to Chris Buescher, I love his teammate a lot more this year. I think that Buescher is just better than Priest, even though Vegas has some really whack odds for him right now, 1,000 to 1. I don't know if he'll win, but man, like, if there's a top 10 or something, that's got to at least have some sort of, like, value. Now, Buescher has yet to finish better than 24th here. So, you know, those numbers mostly just bait or whatever, but, you know, he has a better driver rating at 1.5-mile tracks than guys like McDowell, Reagan, Wallace in this range, and, of course, has more experience than guys like Priest and Hemric. And even when they're in Xfinity, not together, but, you know, Buescher won the championship in Xfinity and just did better than those guys in general. And, you know, starting 30th for Buescher, I really like that. He's a guy that really sneaks up there and gets a decent finishing position usually. Again, this is a track he struggled at. 47 average driver rating here, not great, but he at least finishes laps. Probably a more solid punt over there on FanDuel. I like Reagan over there on FanDuel as well. Him and Buescher kind of usually are always underpriced and just finish enough laps to be a decent play, which is all you're looking for when you're punting over there. You're not really even looking for place differential. But just a little added bonus there with Buescher. Probably not going to finish better than like 20th, but he'll still move up some spots. And just, I think he'll just outperform guys like Priest and Wallace and Hemric, who might slide into a little bit more ownership than them. I don't know about Priest, but I do see Buescher going a little bit overlooked here. Moving on down to Michael McDowell, $6,000, starting 12th. Huge fade. No, don't play that. He's going backwards. If you have to, I guess on FanDuel, but on DraftKings, that is an absolute no play starting 12th. There's no way. I love what he did last week. He was amazing last week. Couldn't have done much better for me, but no, this is not a place he's even had a modicum of success at in the past, and his equipment is not... His front row equipment he shares with Reagan and Tiff there. You know, just no, absolutely no starting 12th. So his teammate Reagan, starting 23rd, also a bit high for him. He's finished 23rd the last 2 years here. You know, just pretty similar stats to McDowell, like the 1.5-mile tracks and all that. Starting 23rd still, it's a little bit high for me. I would play him on FanDuel for the very, very low ownership, but I don't see any upside in playing him on DraftKings. He's not going to go up much higher than like 20th, maybe like 18th at the very best. I don't know. You know, he got a little bit better last year compared to the year before, but still, this really isn't much of the track type for Reagan here. And Ty Dillon, starting in 21st, very unfortunate to see him starting in 21st. He's a guy I kind of would be on here otherwise. Again, sort of like Reagan, just starting a little bit high. I plan on using him a little bit more, but he has finished 15th and 17th here in two of the last 3 years, 26th last year. And his 1.5 mile stats pretty much on par with guys like Bubba and Buescher, just a touch better than McDowell or Reagan. But, you know, Jermaine's got that that RCR connection, obviously, that his brother races with. You know, starting 21st, unfortunately, just a little bit high for me. Have to just stick to playing him on FanDuel. There really are a lack of options down here. So he's going to be someone that you're going to use a little bit just because there aren't too many great options down here or down low, and you don't want to get too married to certain plays. So you'll mix him in, but just starting 21st, I don't see him doing a whole lot better than that. If anything, just treading water in that spot. Now you've got Matt Tift, the other front row racer, teammate to Reagan and McDowell, of course, a lot more green. You know, with rookies and stuff like that, if you're going to play guys like Priest, guys like Tift, guys like Hemric, just know that there is a decent chance that they get like a pit penalty in their first few races. We see it happen a lot. Rookies, there's such a learning curve from going from Xfinity to a Cup Series. You know, guys like Hemric and Tift, they're solid every week performers in Xfinity Series, but you even saw it last week, like these guys were getting flagged and stuff just because it's different. They're not used to all the timing lines on pit road and stuff. So you got Tiff starting in 31st, which is a decent enough starting spot, I guess, but I don't think he has much real upside. His Vegas lines right now are like 800-1, 1,000-1, depending on where you look. Can move up some spots, but this is not a situation like where, you know, in years past where we've had good guys start in the very back here and get place differential that way. He's worth a punt if you need to spend up for these guys, especially if Harvick's going to be in play. You're going to need to play guys like Tift and Ty Dillon and all that. It's just not in the greatest spot, honestly. It might be better to just slam in more of the upper 6K kind of guys. Those are going to be safer plays, but this is going to save you the money if Harvick really is in play. So just keep that in mind there. And then we go to a bit more of the scrubbier scrubs. You've got Ross Chastain here in 32nd. He's probably more similar in value to Tift. So really, it's probably after him you go to the scrubbier of scrubs, but Chastain really impressed last week, and again this week he's going to be racing all three races, the Truck Series, Xfinity Series, and Cup Series. So he'll do three races in 2 days, and really seemed to help him in Trucks. He did great in all three races, or last week at Daytona, I mean. He did very well in the Trucks, and then Xfinity has always done really well at Daytona, and then ended up being in the optimal, just surviving the main Daytona race for Cup there. Now, last year we saw Chastain pretty much constantly finish in the top 30 We saw in 75% of 1.5 mile races, he finished in the top 30. He finished all but one. He had one DNF, and he almost never finished in the bottom five. 92% of the time, he finished 35th or better. But it's that 75% stat for 30th or better that we kind of like seeing from him. That means he'll move up at least a few spots, and he's $5,400, so that's not a bad place to go, honestly. Although we do see only 25% of the time he breaks the top 25 at these tracks. So upside's not crazy, but he's going to just squeak up a few spots. He only got one practice lap in, so tomorrow's going to be a little important in judging where he's at. Last year he finished 30th here, which wouldn't really get you a whole lot, but I expect him to finish around like 28th, 29th, 27th, somewhere around there, and just give you a little value. And if not much, if these guys down low are all going to score pretty low, he might end up being one of the better scorer ones, just kind of by default, with not many of these guys being set up for a lot of place differential, you know, them going laps down and stuff. So to finish off the rest of the guys, just really quickly, Castle starting 33rd, not really much of a play here. He had that 22nd place finish in 2017, but that was kind of a really just out of place sort of finish for him. He went backwards in equipment last year pretty significantly. He was in a much better car. I think it was the 34 that McDowell ended up taking over. He was in that car, and he did pretty all right. Would sometimes, you know, that's where he had that 22nd place finish. Didn't race this race last year, but we usually see him towards the back of the field here, and really doesn't have too much of a chance of being a great play unless there is some sort of accident that there just isn't much of a precedence for. But, you know, new package and stuff. Track gets older. You might see a little tiny bit more attrition than usual, but I'm not really counting on it. Would much rather go Chastain there. Corey LaJoie starting 24th, probably the fade of the field. Him, Stenhouse, Suarez, and McDowell, just super fades right there. Probably McDowell and LaJoie is the biggest fades. He way overqualified. No, do not take him. He's in Matt DiBenedetto's car from last year, so you can pretty much look to his stats for what you should expect here, and he's never finished better than 28th, so, you know, might be almost he might be more closer to Chastain in value than I thought, really, but not too much upside for any of these guys, really. They're kind of desperation plays. With LaJoie, you can't play him because he's starting 24th, that's right. You can't play him at all, really. There's no way he does anything but goes backwards. And then the scrubs at the very end, you're not going to play these guys. They're going to go several laps down. Kligerman, McLeod, who lost his crew chief alongside LaJoie there for failing tech a couple of times. No. Cody Ware, no. Smithley, no. Just don't play these guys. They're going to be freaking terrible. And yeah, that's the Fast 40 for this week. Going to be a real learning experience. Again, make sure you check the Domination Station and the Research Station tomorrow after final practices. I'll let you guys know and update that. That is going to be huge. But, you know, that's the breakdown for Atlanta this week. And really excited to, you know, the future of NASCAR here and to see how this changes up racing. You know, the 1.5 mile tracks, as much as I love them for how predictable they were, honestly, as far as viewing goes, I understand why they'd want to mix it up a little bit here. We're mostly not happy about, you know, the major changes and stuff, but still, you know, the All-Star race ended up being all right. So, you know, maybe if we get more racing like that, and less of these lap turners where you fall asleep and someone leads pretty much the entire race, you know, I guess that's for the better. But yeah, until next week at, I think it's Phoenix, I'll see you guys then. Good luck in your races this weekend. See ya.
Thank you for listening to the DFS Army Podcast. Join the DFS Army today and gain access to our private Slack chat, where you can chat with real DFS pros and coaches, as well as other DFS Army members with winning track records. Also included in your membership is access to our premium articles, DFS Army weighted projections for every sport we offer, from NFL to MMA, weekly player picks and cheat sheets, the strategy vault of timeless concepts, and the DFS Army Domination Station, a truly state-of-the-art lineup optimizer offering your personal projections or ours. The DFS Army membership is the best value across the industry. Join today and get two free ebooks, as well as The Secrets to Unlocking a New Level to Your Game.
Hey guys, are you looking for a sports book that you can trust? Well, look no further than mybookie.ag, where you can get a 50% match on your initial deposit of up to $1,000 when you use promo code DFSArmy. As a bonus, when you use promo code DFSArmy, you also get a free month of DFSArmy VIP and DFSArmy Beat the Bookie membership. That's a $100 combined value. So we'll help you with your daily fantasy sports, and we'll help you with your handicapping free when you sign up for mybookie.ag using promo code DFSArmy.